Probably will be,
I'll bet. Okay, so yeah, we'll call the meeting to order. This is, today is May 25th. It's the Technical Advisory Task Force meeting here at the Newport City Hall. And I'm going to just go around and do a roll call. Start at.
Okay, Peggy Hawker, City of Newport.
Pete Lawson.
David Young.
Joe Neward.
And Frank DeFelipis. And I think Charlie's going to show up fairly soon. Okay, so last meeting, just to kind of knife through it, also I sent out an email, just kind of the minutes from last meeting, but I had this framework document that we kind of put together. I'll spend a minute or so just kind of revamping where we're at. So we talked about the framework. We looked at some of the inputs from the data sources that we've had, and one is going to be the GP survey and the chemical list. The DEQ permit, that was circulated when back by a friend of mine, Penelope. She sent that out, and then any other historical data. And we kind of just made decisions that from the GP survey, no additional information is required because it is what it is and how much further we could look at. The DEQ permit was followed into that same category, as well as the importance of historical data. Are there any questions on those data inputs that, you know, where we decided on last week that we didn't need additional from those components?
The only thing I ever missed, I mean, reading your emails, the only thing I've missed is the GP presentation. I feel bad about that, but I figured you guys are the chemists and the brainy ones. So.
We had a quorum there. We had very good representation. One of the additional pieces was, and this was also circulated in, you know, at the when the presentation, they came up with the chemical list. And everybody saw it electronically. I printed out a copy. We just kind of looked at it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
She is here. She is.
That's why I said I'm glad you're a chemist.
Buenas noches.
Did you just get back from
Argentina?
Wow.
Well, welcome.
I thought you'd retired.
No.
Where's the other person? I'm sorry.
Was she that retired?
Maybe I have, but I'm still working. Well, yes. Cheryl retired.
Oh,
Cheryl.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So
I get very confused.
Well, here's the agenda. Welcome. Annie's Segura. Did I say that? Segura. Just for the recording, I'm making sure that we're all present in Counterport. And I'm fairly certain Charlie's going to walk through that door any minute. But anyway, he's not here. What I was doing is, we've already called it the meeting to order, and just giving a kind of a review of what we covered last meeting about the data inputs and the chemical list. And, you know, reviewing this, we looked at, you know, what was really missing from the chemical list, the GP survey, and all the historical documents. And that was the bioaccumulation data. That's the elephant in the room that nobody's talking about. And so
we did talk about it at their presentation.
They didn't do it.
And that was the gap. It wasn't part of their study.
Right, that was the gap. That was the big gap. And so we kind of made a decision, or we did make a decision, that was the area of focus where we'll go towards is bioaccumulation.
I saw the email from Charlie as far as the long-term research for shellfish in different estuaries and bays, and there's, I guess, extensive studies.
Oh, yeah, there's links that led to links to links to links,
so
yeah.
I think there is, there's enough people who have done it enough that probably, I guess there isn't already here.
So that's where I apologize, I didn't put this out, but best practices, where we came up with the gap analysis from, you know, the data inputs, and that was one of the things is bioaccumulation. Another item, well, before I move forward past the inputs, I'll just circulate it one more time, was since Peter wasn't here at that meeting, or you folks.
The other three guys weren't.
Anyways, bioaccumulation is an area of focus, and it really tells us, in the city's behalf, is it safe to eat the food out there, and is it safe to be exposed to that water? That's the study that's going to really drive the point home so that we can have an answer.
We've already got the data for the second question. Well, you already got the water analysis, don't you?
Yes, we have water analysis.
It's the fish part.
We have, right.
Right. Were you present at the BP?
Yeah, you were.
I think it was something like that. So bioaccumulation studies, the takeaway from that was Charlie sent us some reference material about bioaccumulation studies, as well as, you know, the best practices. And so we're not reinventing the wheel. It's something that's already available and standard.
It just needs to be gathered and assimilated.
Right. So the key piece from that meeting was to define bioaccumulation plan and scope. And so I'm going to come back to that because that's probably where we need to focus today. Part of that reference material is a rough order of magnitude cost, and you'll see it on the framework plan. And I'm not sure if I saw something on that reference material that Charlie sent. And then we also spoke about the type of RFP that we would want to do, and it was a design performance based on the proposal. So we weren't going to go with requests for information. It was more of, again, the best practices type of approach.
Do these two gentlemen have what's in your hand?
I didn't.
I've got it in front. Oh, you don't
you know,
extras?
Would it be appropriate to run
I'll make copies of that, but I just need to tell you that whatever kind of approach you take in terms of soliciting proposals, we have to be in compliance with our public contracting rules.
That is, for me, that was clearly understood, and so.
What would you like copied in out?
Well, could you take these four pages?
Oh, I was thinking one.
Well, I brought the draft verbiage that Charlie put together. So maybe we'll take.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that would be helpful.
Yeah.
And we'll just take a break until Peggy comes back. But let me just take a moment here and ask, are we on the right track?
I was understood by me that that's where we were going.
Yeah.
And you've done bioaccumulation studies, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's done it, so it's all right. So we've got somebody, hopefully, around.
Okay. Well, the point of my question is, are we talking about the right things and we're doing the right approach to this, just as feedback from your opinion?
I see what
you're talking about.
Right,
okay, well, we'll talk about the framework. And what I've done is just essentially outline the steps until we have a product at the end, just from a program management perspective.
I think we're going the right path because you can look at instantaneous discharges, but what effect are they? We look at the long-term health of the local environment, be it the fish, tourism, can you wait, can you eat it, can you? I think it's the answer, and that's going to show up in the bioaccumulations.
Sure.
Okay. So I think that is right. But how you do it, which do you contract out, do you put non-profit, or educational funds, I mean, it's...
Charlie?
Yes, sir.
Charlie Plyman's here.
I blame Lee and Tim for holding me up in the hallway there. I had to take a taxi to get here. Can you believe it?
What? How did that?
I loaned my truck to my wife. Bad idea.
Peggy's making copies of the framework and the copy of your draft
distribution.
That was a brainstorm. I wouldn't call it a draft, I was trying to give us something to.
About getting something on paper is the first.
That's
step,
your original, so. Mm-hmm. And then here are some for both sides of the table.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alrighty, so we kind of recapped a little bit, just to bring you up to speed, Charlie, on kind of where we're going with this. And really, the key focus of today's meeting or tonight's meeting is the output, and that is just to kind of work more on the scope of the bioaccumulation piece. That's, you kind of have an outline here. And I was just giving some definition of rough order of magnitude cost. And that was based on, you know, so we can get an understanding if, you know, if we have to tailor our scope. And I think you sent some reference materials, which is a lot, Charlie.
I wanted to send those because it had been raised several times that there was an absence of this sort of monitoring happening or being used before. And I wanted to just kind of demonstrate there's a lot of resources out there, and in fact, they have been doing bioaccumulation studies.
He's done it before.
The muscle watch program and other things have been happening for a long, long time. So.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't mean to make it sound like a negative. I just wanted to say we're not reinventing the wheel.
Gotcha.
So I apologize for that. And then Peggy just reminded us that the RFP is really a city process. We define the scope, and then, you know, we kind of made it very clear last meeting that we define the scope, and then they'll have their standard city verbiage and legalese to plug into our scope or to develop that RFP.
But we would write the task description?
Yes.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so with that on the framework piece, the other thing was in the execute process of the procurements, there's a vendors list. We kind of threw out some names, but we'll flush that out as we go. And then, you know, the city procurement process, which really ties into the RFP. So I think as far as framework, that's just the discussions that we have to go. And if we can move this meeting to kind of focus on scope. Is everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you, Charlie, for providing content for discussion. So really, really fast tracks the discussion. If everybody has the handout, there's two pages. Looks like there's.
Did you get an agenda?
Three parts.
Would you like an agenda?
Sure.
Would you like an agenda?
Oh, I actually. Let's see. We already discussed everything. We're on agenda item 5.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Is that okay to jump within your recording of the meeting? Okay, all the procedures are being followed?
Yes.
Okay,
right
perfect.
Here it says you can do whatever you want.
Oh, perfect.
Because it's noticed.
Just
so
to
be fired.
Jump back quickly to agenda item 4 on the identified gaps of data inputs and determined needs or outputs. I just want to make sure folks knew. I just put by accumulation because I felt like that's what kept rising to the top of the discussion, but mm-hmm. I didn't mean for that to exclude any other data inputs that the group was interested in exploring.
I think that was great.
I was trying to look really at the charges of the task force, the one that kept rising to the surface was that, is the seafood safe kind of thing. And I felt like a bioaccumulation study was about the best we could do on that.
And what about the safety of the water? Is that the...
I feel like from a... You know, my personal opinion is a bit based on the water quality testing that was performed by the aquatic survey, that it's, you know, it's safe for humans. Long-term bioaccumulation, it did not trigger a tier two study under EPA's sort of model of tier one, tier two, which would indicate that it's safe enough for...
It meets all their requirements for testing.
Yeah, as far as priority pollutants go. And I didn't feel like they left any out of the study. Now, this is just my personal take on that as far as the water quality goes.
But bioaccumulation was not indicated by a tier one study either.
It was essentially they do a sediment analysis, and that sediment analysis based on the amount of, I guess, priority pollutants that they scan for, based on the levels, it depends on whether that triggers a tier two.
Right.
And so what they did, what they found, it didn't require a tier two, and that's for the sediment in particular, but no water quality bioaccumulation was done.
The other thing I think is that they found, which we probably all know, is that it was, the sediment was primarily sand, and sand just doesn't hold anything. I mean, it's just sort of self-cleaning, if you will. It doesn't accumulate something like an organism would.
Right, and it was very low organic content.
Exactly, very low organic content.
So, you know, they did look at community structure and didn't see anything alarming there.
But that doesn't address the consumption issue.
But it does not address the consumption issue. Again.
And from the consumption issue, I feel like the best we could do was a bioaccumulation study.
Seems to be an established protocol for it, those groups all over.
But I'm not a professional at human health or what the priority indicators are. That's why I think some of this, I don't know, may...
So we should only test scallops.
Well, Dave may know more than I, because you've actually done some of these studies, but in general, animals that are at higher trophic levels, in other words, predators or carnivores, and long-lived animals and animals that are very local to the area, that stay in the area for a long time, are the ones where you have the best chance.
I mean, makes a lot of sense. Transitory... Species.
Yeah, right. Not hake or something like that that are swimming all over the ocean. Right.
There's one exception at least to that. The polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons generally don't biomagnify, so you generally look in the, you do see bioaccumulation as opposed to the biomagnification step that I heard you talk about. Bioaccumulation is generally sought for in things like mollusks.
So what's the distinction between biomagnification and bioaccumulation?
There's a bit of the controversy about that, but generally I consider bioconcentration to be uptake from the water to an organism, mm-hmm. bioaccumulation to be uptake through well, I would think the lower trophic levels, and then you biomagnify from there.
Through the food chain?
Yeah. I may have that a little bit backwards. I haven't worked in this field for about 10 years, so I have a little rusty tooth that I have to get. So I was really looking for guidance as to what kind of things I needed to look into. But one of the things that concerns me is we haven't talked about bioconcentration, accumulation, and biomagnification of what? And what are the targets that we're concerned about? Is it the current priority pollutant list, or do we screen it based on some criteria that data already obtained?
Well, that might be a scope question, and we start defining what we're looking for. But help me understand, you raised a new term, all of it's new to me, but biomagnification. Versus
that's
bioaccumulation. I just want to get a terminology set here.
Well, let's just assume that you have a mollusk scallop or a mussel, and it is taking up material either by directly absorbing it from the water in the process of there's gills, there's membranes, or usually, mm-hmm. I think, by ingesting particulates and then stripping some of those materials off the particulates and then digesting them.
So one would show an actual accumulation versus...
It would, well, that would, in that case, that would be a low trophic level organism. I mean, mm-hmm. The lowest trophic level would be plants.
Algae.
Huh?
Algae.
Algae, yes. And there are studies that do that. That would be the true bioaccumulation, bioconcentration step. There, I'm a little far. Yeah. Maybe there's no difference at that trophic level. But biomagnification then is amplification principally by the feeding process, where bioconcentration, the direct absorption from water, is less. And this would be the case for mercury. Classic example is mercury or DDT. Well, let's say mercury, whereby the principal input is through the food, and the form of mercury is an organic form called methylmercury, which has a very long residence time in the organism. And that's why the older organisms have more such substances. In fact, the canneries in the 70s stopped accepting very large tuna because they would have naturally too much mercury in them, just because they were old enough to have continued to build it up.
It's like dead orcas. Dead orcas are considered toxic waste.
Is that right?
The levels of metal that have bioaccumulated in their fats are so high.
So one would be, you know, if it's in the algaes and in the area, the environment that's constantly changing, we're trying to monitor a specific area, would the bioaccumulation be
would probably be a benthic organism,
yeah,
in that place. And, you know,
it would be more specific versus...
What we did in the 70s was to design a program called the cage muscle approach. I've been studying it in muscles, Middle East California, since 1963.
We
have but in the 70s, and under an EPA grant, we just caged in Middle East California in cages and bags hanging. We actually put them down on the sediment near the outfall, and then we had a buoy, a string buoy, and we published that. I should perhaps write that paper. But as we got farther away from the sediments, and I should say the discharge that was occurring at the depth of the sediments, there was less and less concentration, but we were really going after DDT at the time. This was off LA. But muscles bioaccumulate metals, they bioaccumulate viruses, they bioaccumulate polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PCBs, pesticides. I don't know about the modern pesticides, I haven't studied those. Organophosphates might. My guess is that they're not bioconcentrated, but I'm not sure.
So I guess, I don't know if you're suggesting this, but should we be looking at higher level organisms that are predatory, or are you,
well,
or shouldn't both concentrations be similar in when you're going to bleed or sweat or urinate certain, or are you suggesting that maybe there's something we should be looking for?
I don't think that there's higher level trophic species that we're going to be looking at because they're transient. And you can't say that they live in this one place because they move in and out of that area. The reason mussels were used, and they're still used today, that main paper that I sent around, I don't know if anybody read it, it's pretty short actually. But this is exactly what they do. They still hang mussels in cages because it is a good indication.
And they don't have feet.
Exactly.
If you want to keep them off the sediments, if you're trying to get the effects of the outfall, and then for man's implication, it was the effluent particulates that are generally fine materials swept away, so they don't accumulate on the sediments, could still be fed upon by suspension or even deposit feeders if the organisms are there. And that's the question: is if there's no organism there that can perform that mechanism, then it's sort of an academic exercise. But
On the other hand, the way to do the study, as you pointed out, is you go collect them and you stick them there and you say...
Yeah, I think that's for the reference material, and what you were referring to is having some sort of something anchored within that mixing zone.
Right. So we're talking about study design now, of course.
But we got into that. We jumped for... We're looking at one aspect of study design, and we're not addressing biomagnification. We're just to see if it's accumulated even at a low trophic level. So muscle would generally be trophic level.
How old do the muscles live? What's that? I collected them annually.
Well,
I mean, do they live 15 years?
I collected them that long off Guava, California, about 13 inches.
How old was it? I don't know. It was just big.
But I think it was reasonably old. We standardized on length, 5 centimeters, just the growth is a factor.
But the huge issue here is we're talking about sandy, high energy, environment.
A lot of people say this whole subject is crazy.
That's right, and it may well be crazy, but I think it's our task to show that if it is crazy, to find out if it's crazy or not.
So I would think it's from a tiered point of view, following up with your suggestion, Pete, we should just think the most logical first step to take, and we might want to tier our even the proposal, unless we're under a time constraint, which I...
In the end, we're on a money constraint.
There's the money. The money, there's some initial cost, and then there's some operational cost. So, yeah, you have to kind of keep it... kind of boiled down to the essence of what is important to understand. You know, is that cloud in the water? Is it
wood pile pulp? Is it sand? That's the first color.
Yeah, and then the other one is the regional impact as far as the local, you know, fish markets and so on. Is it safe to eat? And so we want to answer that question when people come to Newport to, you know, recreate. They see something in the water, they will equate that to, ooh, I don't want to eat the food. And then, you know, or my kids, but my personal interest, don't go in the water because you don't know what it is. So we just need to answer that question. Is it safe to eat? Is it safe to get into the water? And then maybe we can look at a response if it is no. But that, you know, we're trying to draw a scope around the methodology of how we're going to answer that question, and, you know, is it in the mixing zone? Is it the type of study? You kind of brought it to the design that test zone.
Right. So I don't know how much of that. It seems like we could do, you know, narrow down the scope of the study quite a bit just with what we know, rather than putting out a very broad RFP to ask somebody to figure out what to do.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I think we'd better do
so
that.
We can maybe tighten up. Starting with boundaries of the area of interest that we want to study is the mixing zone.
I think we should, well, before we get into that, there's one other data gap I'd just like to bring up, because it's kind of come up here, and that is nobody's done any, I don't think it's an issue, but nobody has done any kind of a coliform analysis.
That's what was on the back of my mind. Was when you talked about, is it safe to get in the water, the first thing I think about is safe from pathogens. I can't remember if that was brought up at the...
Bacteria. There's a wealth of information there. It's tested every week, and that's handled by the Department of Human Services.
On Nye Beach, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so...
Oh, in the water, you mean?
Yeah, and there's also multiple bacterial inputs. You have Nye Beach stormwater outfall, which is chronic high bacteria for a myriad of reasons. Yeah. And then you also have Georgia Pacific's outfall, which is extremely high in bacteria. Mm-hmm. It is a natural... Clybella or something like that.
bugs in a bag.
Yeah, so it'll make your coliform light up, even though it's not.
It's not pathogenic.
No, it's not pathogenic.
There's a difference between coliforms and fecal coliforms.
It creates I think a lot of confusion there because of the multiple inputs. You know, I had put, you know, kind of a very general two tiers to the bioaccumulation piece, and I'm not against like including bacteria if we want, but I had kind of just put those down as, you know, metals that are known to be elevated in the effluent, and then other contaminants like, you know, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons.
There's no indication of any PCBs in the effluent then.
I don't think they had any.
Do you want the chemical list? Did you get a copy?
Yeah, he has a copy. I gave it to him.
Is that next one?
Yeah.
That's the one that was handed out.
He said, is that an extra one? Can you keep
that? That is an extra one.
Okay,
yes.
That was the
good. Yeah, they've actually brought
in. So, just to close the loop on that data gap. Yeah. So, what I heard was there's other data sources available, other monitoring.
Yeah.
Is that sufficient or not sufficient?
It doesn't go out to the mixing zone. It's along the shore, along the beach.
Yeah, but
is there any evidence of elevated levels of targets?
Yes.
If there's no low evidence of elevated targets, that those data would at least be addressing the water issue.
Right.
It doesn't address whether there would be bioaccumulation in
the No, but the point is, what I'm trying to say is they're geographically separated, because what is being monitored is onshore, the beach, and that sort of thing. And this outfall is, what, 3 kilometers offshore, whatever.
Right. So then
they're
not together. So then the question becomes, is
Charlie
said,
3,700.
So sideways.
The question becomes, since we know, GP has told us, that there's lots of bacteria in the outfall, so how do you interpret high bacteria count?
Well,
in terms of human health and
the way the state approaches this, which is you monitor the swash zone where people recreate, which is what the beach monitoring program is, and not like California or other states, we don't close the beach when there's elevated levels. We issue advisories for various political reasons. We issue an advisory. So that's sort of the state's process. Is it safe to go in the water? There's a good chance you might get sick. There's a probable chance that you'll get sick if you get into the water, and we'd advise against it. But I kind of feel like it takes the burden off of us to evaluate bacteria, unless it's of the interest of this group to do that.
I had a question. When we were looking at the GP survey, did the mixing zone have an influence, or was it influenced by the city of Newport discharge line there as well?
Their zone of initial dilution does not encompass the city of Newport's outfall, right, although that they are very tight. They're adjacent.
So if you came up with a more...
Yeah, once further.
Your city water is a lot cooler than your GP outfall. That's warmer. So GP kind of pops up.
Well, if anything, that's kind of a conflicting message too. Based on their analysis, it doesn't actually pop up. It sometimes sinks down below.
It gets trapped below a thermocline.
Yeah, it gets plugged. Well, yeah.
Or was it a halocline?
It's a halocline. It gets trapped below the halocline. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, back to the other subject about whether or not you want to study the. Whether or not the coliforms are dangerous for people to get in the water, that sort of thing. I think that while that may not be specifically addressed in the resolution, it probably would be very much of interest to the general public. And as long as this group is putting forth this much effort to study the outfall, it seems it might be seen as reckless or something to miss the study of the bacteria if there is in fact a large amount of bacteria that comes out of in that effluent.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question. Is there a way on the beach where it matters to discriminate between bacteria from the outfall and bacteria from the sewage outfall?
Yeah, source.
And yes.
There is.
Technically there is, because they're not processing sewer wastewater. They're at GP. They're only processing. They should only have that Klebsiella background bacteria. Mm-hmm. So genetically, you can do that. That's not cheap.
It's
very expensive.
Them.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I don't know.
In other words, what they may have
PCR
and
we do fish samples for everything, counting everything, about $50 a sample.
These are like $800 a sample.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No.
What they're doing is they're separating. The source. In other words, is it a seagull? Is it a cow? Is it a person? Is it, et cetera? That's what he's referring to. Which is what.
Well, there may be, no, because she's right, because there may be, what I'm referring to, because I had to do this one for other stormwater issues, is just that. It delineates. It'll do a few species, but in general, it'll categorically say is this human waste or is this dog waste or is this just what general animal species it may be coming from or group of animal species that it could be coming from. If somebody had a genetic tag for that particular bacteria, then it would be cheaper.
So
it would be the $50.
I'm sure you could develop an analysis that would be pretty quick that would just distinguish between GP and everything else. I don't know what it would cost to develop it.
Well, is there bacterium been demonstrated by anybody to be at all harmful to humans? Or
is there a different permit between GP and the city for the bacterial outfall?
Different permits.
Is DEQ this, or is it Department of Health, or is it all
DEQ? One question.
What we've seen,
they're separate permits.
But they're under the same
department,
or it's the Department of DEQ, right?
Yeah, the agency.
One under the state health laws and one under the.
No. It's the same agency handles all the water quality permits. And Georgia Pacific has a separate one than DEQ, or than City of Newport. Has it been known pathogenic? I don't really know. I don't think that any levels of bacteria exposure and quantity are good. But as a known, I don't know. Like, it was kind of the study that Georgia Pacific did to source and find out where all this bacteria was coming from. The end result of the study, the report to DEQ essentially, was that this is a naturally occurring background bacteria.
It's just
that
higher.
They can't control, more or less. And it grows in their ponds and it grows in their pipes.
Well, they're culturing it.
They're culturing it.
They don't chlorinate.
And to chlorinate would be a more environmentally hazardous trade-off.
Mm-hmm. Is it correct to assume, and I've heard this before, that the bacteria is going to be very short-lived anyway because nothing lives very well in the seawater.
In general, particularly the coliform bacteria, does not hold up in seawater very long. So it's one of the reasons why you see bacteria levels spiking and dropping and stuff like that.
Off Night Beach,
but yeah, they get the pulse, they get it in there, and then it does. It dies pretty quickly. In fact, to culture E. coli or coliforms in ocean water, you have to buffer it with a lot of fresh water, or it'll die. You can't incubate it.
I just wanted to just make a statement here. So we'll put coliform testing back into the scope along with bioaccumulation?
I almost seem like we're talking about two different things. We're talking about water versus tissue here. I thought we were coming to talk about tissue, but we're now talking about another aspect of water that was not dealt with by the previous study.
Well, I think what we want to do is what is from a, you know, the public presence as well of, again, answering the question, is it safe to go in the water, and is the food that comes out of the local oceans here safe to eat?
And okay, so, as far as the first question goes, that's what the state is doing, because they're monitoring where people go in the water. Nobody jumps off a boat 3 kilometers out to swim around the outfall.
They're monitoring bacteria.
That's what I say. Instead of safe, well, I was addressing it from this, safe from the point of view of bacteria.
Yeah.
Because I thought all the other tests for the sediments, and I guess I can't remember if they did water too.
Yeah, they did water.
They wanted to find any pits, did they?
No.
But and I think ongoing testing for the bacteria is ongoing testing. They haven't done the bioaccumulation in the local fisheries or the clamming or the. But I think that we're just going to do either one time or a multi-year testing of the bioaccumulation. I think as we're doing the bacterial study, just keep letting them do it. And,
well, so I'm just thinking, you know, the way Lon brought it up is the question in people's mind. So how can we resolve it? And maybe we don't even need a study. Maybe we can just do it basically from a literature search in our.
Well, I think we would. Yeah? Would I would. Might, I don't think we would just defer to the state monitoring.
Well, I mean, the question is what to me. The question is. We have a monitoring history of coliform bacteria on the beach.
It's actually Enterococcus is what they're looking for.
Enterococcus, okay.
Yeah, but
so, well, what, yeah. So, two questions are, and I'm not sure what order to ask. One question is, you know, so what is contributed, what is coming out of the GP outfall? Does it have any human health implications? And if so, or even if not, how much does it contribute to the bacterial counts on the beach? So it might actually be, you know, exacerbating the concern. We might say, well, given this, I don't know if the human health consequences of it are low, which it seems like they.
Well, it would still demonstrate a violation in their permit.
Well,
because you have to understand that they're allowed to break water quality standards within this zone of initial dilution.
Right.
But outside of that, they are required to meet water quality standards. So, yeah. Failing bacteria on the beach.
If it came from there.
So, I mean, that's very compelling.
Is Enterococcus likely to be coming out of GP?
Not according to Charlie.
Well, you have to remember, too, that these bacteria that we use, they're indicator species. They're not actually the species that make you sick. So, you're right. You'd have to consider whether or not, we know that some of these bacteria will light up an Enterococcus test or coliform test, for that matter, a total coliform test. So sometimes you can't tell. I guess is whether or not it's.
But then if a lawyer for GP would come with that would say, well, look, we're getting a false positive here.
But I think that's back to the point of if we ask the question. Or require the question to be in such a way that says we want to differentiate between the bacteria source in one versus the bacteria source in another, and then try and quantify that or test for that within the nearshore ocean, then you can definitively say it's coming from this source and it's contributing to high levels of bacteria on the beach that are or aren't safe.
Right. So I see there's.
And remember, it's not our job to stand in front of DEQ or anybody else and say, hey, these results say that you need to do this, that, or the other. Sure. I mean, we're providing information for the council, okay, for the public, so, and the city's certainly not going to do that either.
Sure.
But you provided a wrinkle that I hadn't thought of, and that is, we could say, okay, well, there's all this stuff coming from GP, but it's perfectly safe, but the way the regulations are written, whether it's safe or not, it's still illegal. Yeah. Well, still a permit violation.
But let me, that's like...
Yeah, but that's if it made it all the way to shore.
But a matter of environmental health and a matter of human health are two different things. I can tell you that it's fine for you to go swimming in super turbid water, but I can also tell you it's not so great for salmon trying to lay their eggs.
That's true.
And so there are two big distinctions, and that's why I really am still having trouble dropping turbidity and color from this, but I think we have enough to chew on with just the bioaccumulation or the coliforms. So,
I don't want to reinvent the wheel, and if there's enough groups already doing the coliform studies, maybe, like Peter was saying, just get the reading and maybe put some context to it as far as a couple times a year it goes over,
Didn't have a response plan to that?
Right, or there's a background level that is, at least get the people that have been doing these studies with the coliforms, and we don't even know what we should look at this point. But if it's something that we shouldn't exclude on hand either.
Let me just see if I captured what we're talking about. So, we're talking about the coliform and human health, and there's a nearshore component or onshore. And that's outside monitoring agencies and state. There's adequate monitoring on that. And then the outfall, I kind of got lost. Is that something that we want to include into the scope, or is it not valid?
I think the question is maybe, because the interaction of humans is at the beach, because there's known elevated levels of bacteria, which we know one source is at the beach. I think the question is the Georgia Pacific outfall contributing to high levels of bacteria at the beach?
Okay, so it would be within that relative mixing zone, some sort of coliform study.
What's some sort of indicator bacteria, what coliforms in the gas?
We wouldn't say that they're outside their limits or permit or anything. We're just saying we can identify that there's a background component at the beach from GP's outfall. If so, if maybe not.
Well, and I think if somebody was to take that, a contractor was to take that, the first thing they'd do is they'd look at the Georgia Pacific study that they did on bacteria. And then they'd look at the state history and they'd compare whether or not there was a way that they could differentiate those two just from the literature, which they may be able to do, and they could come back really easily, or they could say, well, to answer this question, it's going to cost X, Y, and Z and take these steps. And I feel like that's maybe something we don't need to spend a whole lot of time between us talking about, but just try and get that into the question that we would ask of an RF in the request for a proposal.
So that'd be number two priority then. Number one priority.
It might just be item number two, whether we wouldn't necessarily prioritize it.
Okay. Yeah. So priority one is bioaccumulation, priority two is the bacteria. Depending on how many dollars and cents is left over.
That's a group.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make sure I understand.
Yeah, that's the way I would look at it based on this discussion right now.
Okay, great.
And then the other point I want to make here before we dive too much further into bioaccumulation, because this is important, we're trying to answer this question of the seafood safe. Is it okay to eat? We're not really able to answer that question with a bioaccumulation study. I want everybody to understand that. If we find really high levels of potential bioaccumulants in this area compared to another area, we can't say one thing or another about the fish that you get.
What we can do is due diligence and then say that, because in the public's eye, perception is reality. And so when they see something out there, we can then say we did due diligence to understand what that is and come with some sort of boundary of safety. But you cannot, yeah, you can't put a stamp on it saying, yes, it's safe to eat, because somebody will find something that's,
right, I'm not sure you come to the boundary of safety. I think you can only say there's four times as much copper in the scallops
exactly.
from the outfall than from the troll. Mm-hmm. And you have obviously no idea, sorry, says whether that has an impact on human health.
That's sure. driving well, the EPA will have, don't they have guidelines?
I think they're just getting into this, being able to actually correlate elevated bioaccumulation with some indication of toxic effects, but they use genetic analysis, the last paper I saw, to try and tease this out. And even then, they only just get, I think it's some correlations. It's a very iffy thing. It's been the driving bioaccumulation people nuts for decades. You get elevations, but you don't know how to interpret the data.
So I think that's, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that.
What you can do is disprove the hypothesis within some limits. You say 95% level is no more than 2 times that.
Well, that's
100%. Right.
Yeah, but 100% of 100% of nothing is
right,
nothing.
Right. I know it's 100% data.
Well, that's pretty important. Now, is the city of Newport going to issue a report at some point? I don't understand where we're going.
Well, I think that your task is to decide how, first of all, to come up with an RFP or an RFQ that contains a scope of work that has to do with testing, ocean testing. And then secondly, I think you will be charged with reviewing the RFPs and making a recommendation to the city council.
But it doesn't have a communications plan.
Right.
Reviewing proposals.
Right.
So we'll review the proposals in this.
You'll review the RFP, you'll develop the scope of work, review the RFP, we'll issue the RFP, then you'll review the proposals. That's my understanding. Okay. That's not your response.
So we don't go as far as reviewing or interpreting the results of the research?
Well, I think you'll do that too.
My understanding was that once we receive the information back, is that we put that together in a brief or an executive summary, so to speak, for the city council, so that they don't end up with a big thing. What we discussed early on in this process was making that part of the requirement for our contractor, in that we outline a specific kind of communication that we'd like to receive on it. Don't give us a data dump. Give us what is interpretable about this. What does the data say? And it'll be exactly what the data says to some degree. And
we could include a comparison with the outside information. I mean, some kind of interpretation, I suppose, or at least comparison with literature about it.
Some context.
Context, yeah.
Okay, so now we're kind of getting into scope pieces. Reporting is going to be, we have priorities by accumulation. Two is, priority two is bacteria. We want a reporting function. And then we can determine how that reporting is, right? But the next piece, unless there's more discussion on that, is what is the world of that? Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just curious on the bioaccumulation, if we're going to go that route, it sounds like we are. What are we going to look for?
What in them?
What in that are we
going to
test for?
We didn't get much guidance from the sediment part. That usually is my understanding of the tier approach.
Correct.
We didn't see anything in the sediments. So then you go back. I would think you go back to the effluent, but they did. I don't see any data for the effluent.
Are we looking? Are we looking at things in the mixing zone, or just outside the mixing zone, or on the shore, or?
No.
I'm confused. As far as an indicator species.
Right. Exactly.
I feel like is something we can leave.
Okay.
To the discretion of the contractor to evaluate.
But I think we should
I kind of just feel like we keep getting into these weeds. Well, are we going to use, you know, a allocator? Right. Are we going to use a muscle? And it's like, we could do this for the next two years.
Right. Yeah. So I think Frank was on the right track with just establishing the process. So
Well, you know, one of the key things that we looked at, and that is best practices, and I think you just summed it up as well. You know, if we do get some general guidelines to our, you know, what is the world that we want this RFP to contain? And then, you know, the RFP approach, we looked at design performance-based proposals. And so, you know, that will give us some leeway to look at it.
You guys know a lot more about these little critters than I do. I just don't know what's out there. So kind of a blend.
So they outlined when they did the report, like kind of all the different species that they found within each area and their reference areas.
I missed that one.
And I mean, there's honestly fauna we could use that's there. I mean, they could go down to the outfall diffusers and they could chisel off some barnacles or pull some polychaetes or whatever around the area and look at those. They could hang a basket of mussels. Mussels are an indicator species. Whether they live there or not, they can still be used as an indicator species. And I think that's important.
But they're all along the rocks inland. I mean, just all along the rocks. Yeah, between the shore and there.
Right.
Now, so there are.
But I think it's important to understand what an indicator species is in a study like this, and that we can put animals out there to use as an indicator species, whether they live there or not.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there are other animals, but what we can say is that these indicator species, you know, exhibited this amount of, you know, bioaccumulation or whatever, and you may or may not be able to tie that to local species that are consumed.
Now, somebody will say, well, gee, you went out and you did this big study with CS2 Hill, and you worked with organisms out there and looked at changes in species assemblages. Wasn't that basically what they were doing?
Yeah.
And they might say, well, why didn't you also just extend that and look at the bioaccumulation in those same organisms?
I asked that question.
Because they weren't required to.
Okay, well.
And also they didn't handle the samples in appropriate ways.
It wasn't part of that statement. But my point is, should we extend that thrust and say, well, let's look first at candidate organisms that actually live there?
Well, that would make sense to me.
So that's part of my outline here. It was, you know, assess in situ species. And then also using, you know, sentinel species as well as indicators. So I kind of bulleted that out. I was trying to keep it really simple, but
Which, by the way, you've done a really good job here.
This looks really good. Can I just ask one question here? And it goes back to a question I asked earlier, and that was the sphere of influence or whatever. You know, we talked about. Obviously, we want to measure for this RFP, if we were to ask a vendor, XYZ, to, you know, we want measurements in the mixing zone. That's a no-brainer. But do we want something out of the mixing zones towards shore and some away from shore?
This is a group discussion. My opinion is that... we're going to have to do reference areas.
Right.
So we're going to have to do within the mixing zone there, and then we're going to have to do a couple of reference areas.
My first impression is to use the same areas that the
You're pretty mapped out well too.
But then when we get to these other questions about. You know, if we're really looking at human health, what's the harm in pulling some razor clams off the beach and running? That's what people are eating there. That's a very popular beach for razor clamming. So that could be one of those sort of resident fauna species that you could look at.
Razor clams from North Jetty and South Jetty.
but you know, realizing that there's only so much you can say about that, you might not be able to say that that came from.
You got the competing inputs. I mean, Beach Creek, or also the Newport City outfall.
Yeah, and I mean the two primary metals that are high in the Georgia Pacific's effluent are lead and copper. Those are the two that are above acute toxicity in the raw effluent. If those spiked in the near shore, somebody could easily say, well, copper, what about brake pads and the runoff from streets and
that is right.
You know, that's a heavy influence of copper. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's only so much you can say about that. But again, we're doing some of this in the context of the Georgia Pacific study. We're also doing some of this in the context of what are the species assemblages like in this area, and is it safe?
Okay, so I'm sorry.
That's a very interesting point. So we test razor clams on the beach and find something in them. How do we tie it back to the GP plume instead of? And I think that the implication a lot of people draw was that GP did it, whether they did or not.
But that's not
a comparison of the different test zones that's going to tell you where it came from, right?
Yeah, right. So if it's high
to some degree, I mean, like if you look at razor clams in Maya Beach and one of your other reference area is, you know, North Yaquina Head, then somebody could easily say, well, Maya Beach is a much more urbanized area than North Yaquina Head, and you're likely to have more.
Then you could test perhaps in another urbanized area with a similar geography.
Sure, I think, yeah.
That's not right in Newport even.
Yeah. You know, you could, that's totally feasible and would be a
fine approach.
Be able to find it in the literature.
Again, you know, I don't know that the questions that we were asked, when you look at and you read them, if they point back to, does this come from GP effluent?
It just may raise more questions.
Because that's, I mean, that's, yeah, that's all for the public to interpret and use however they're going to. But I feel like, number one, I don't think the city's gonna make a statement about Georgia Pacific and their effluent based on this study. I'd be really surprised to see the city council go, whoa, we need to you know, do something about Georgia Pacific because of these test results.
It depends on what the results are.
Yeah.
Burden of proof.
If you think that the city council is not going to be upset if you have an extremely negative result from
I think that there's only so much that there's only so far that the city can go out on a limb and trying to tie this data directly.
Well, the city isn't going to do any of that. That's what you guys do.
So that's back to my previous point, which is the city isn't going to do it. Somebody would go to the state of Oregon and say, hey, look at this data.
We had this finding, right?
That we have. Right. You need to do X, Y, or Z.
So we may not have to do it all. We might just do an initial stage. And see whether it tripped further investigation by the state. And I'm not familiar with how aggressive their, how comprehensive their programs are.
So we need some more data inputs. I'm looking at the clock, and I know we have a few more things to get through. But we're starting to work on the scope. And we have priorities, and then we have this draft RFP. And is it appropriate to develop a workshop so some folks can? Do we have to have this meeting to start working on?
No, probably would be better served in developing the scope of work for the RFP if you had a subcommittee, if you will.
Sure.
That would not constitute a quorum, so there could only be three of you.
Mm-hmm. No more than three.
Because if it's more than three, then we're going to have a regular meeting, and we have to notice it. And
Sorry.
So, I think that
honestly, I think to move this forward, as it should move forward, mm-hmm. you need to do that rather than having the full task force, if that's agreeable to everyone.
We did bring up some important stuff today, that other things to consider, but yeah, this, I think it has to move much faster. I'm sorry if I cut you off.
No, but if you do decide to have a little subcommittee to develop at least the scope of work, mm-hmm. They could work on that and then bring it back to the committee as a whole for some sort of review.
So let's just have a discussion about subcommittees, because we can probably have one group, if we divide the work out and then come back together as a whole and discuss subcommittee activities to take a different part. How do we break this apart? We talk about zones and reference areas, and then another subcommittee possibly for bioaccumulation study, and maybe touch on the bacteria study and methodology, or what you're testing for. I'm just asking as a general question, would those be two logical groups to break out, or is there a different division that we can address the scope in two pieces?
Seems to me the areas and the organisms are intimately associated. You're not going to find scallops on a beach.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. You kind of need to do both at once.
I guess I have one quick question. Charlie, where do we get the coliform data? Does it not go into a database? The stuff the aquarium is doing?
So, Surfrider data is all online. You can get that at www.surfrider.org/ I think it's Blue Water Task Force. I think it's the address. I can double check that. And then the state monitoring data is all online on the Oregon Coastal Atlas. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Coastal Atlas program or not.
Never used it.
I try to forget it, but that's a long story.
Well, PSCO, I think, feeds some data into it. A lot of the ecological data is now going into Marine Map, which is a whole other story and issue.
We were wondering about the state health. I was wondering about the state health data.
That's on the Oregon Coastal Atlas. So the beach monitoring program is run by the Department of Human Services, funny enough. They contract DEQ to do it. So that's part of the Federal Beach Act. They get funding, not a whole lot, about $250,000 a year to monitor all the beaches in Oregon. Which is why we do Blue Water Task Force.
One storm should take care of that.
Yeah. Okay, so two work sessions, if that's okay with everybody. One is to type of studying or monitor, and the other one is area of studying or monitoring. If those are appropriate titles, but those are two pieces that we just need to nail down. Are there folks that want to volunteer for one or the other?
Could you reread those?
One is the type of study, and then the other one is area, meaning reference zones, defining. We just need to define those zones and reference zones so we can just walk away with a concrete, these are the boundaries and this is what we're looking for.
I think you had mentioned this before briefly, and I feel like that the type of study is tied to the zone, the area. For example, like coliform, we'd be doing some beach testing. Again, this is some stuff that we could leave up to the contractor and how they interpret the proposal.
Well, the point of an RFP is that you request the proposal and then you look at what people give you. If they don't give you what you want or anything reasonable, you say, we want another.
Yeah, we want to make sure you
give them some guidance.
We specify right. what we want.
To come up with a solution, yeah.
How to do it is maybe a different question.
Right. No, yeah, you don't want to do that.
A request for proposals, usually you get a bunch back and then you choose the one that falls within your...
But you don't have to have the contractors guessing what you want.
No.
Okay, the other one where I mentioned type of study is we're looking at metals and other chemicals and how their accumulations. And again, it's probably, obviously you're not going to look for that on the shore,
yeah.
but if you just define what it is we're looking for, and then the other group goes, where we need to start, you know, as a reference where we look.
I see your point, but you're going to look for different things in different places.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
I have a question. Can we even look in this mixing zone, or are we to stay outside the mixing zone?
No, well, I would say it's in the mixing zone would definitely be a reference point.
In other words, if you get nothing there at all, then of course you're probably not going to get anything outside either.
Because they're allowed to have over concentrations within that zone, because that's where they're mixing it. So
yeah, but they're not allowed to bioaccumulate within that zone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you they can... That gets into like habitat degradation and anti-degradation reviews and fun stuff like that. You can pollute the heck out of an area as long as you can demonstrate it doesn't hurt that area, and to some degree. And once it gets outside of the said defined area, the pollution has been
diluted
enough that it's safe.
Right. So, yeah. While we're thinking about this one,
mm-hmm.
So as I recall, we have about $70,000. Is that right?
Oh, three times.
I thought it was 100 more than that.
Oh, yeah.
It was 3 years worth, so around 150 somewhere.
Yeah.
In that
oh, 150,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the one time, and then the reoccurring is.
Reoccurring hasn't been allocated yet.
Okay.
Right.
But I think that what I heard people say is that rather than having two sub-task forces, if you will, to discuss this, since the issues are tied together, the type of study and the area of study, that you just need one sub-task force.
I think that would be sufficient.
The reason I brought that up was if we do everything we've been talking about at this table, there's no way anybody's going to be able to do it for that amount of money. So we have to.
Exactly.
We have to.
Well, then you prioritize.
We have to focus our RFPs. I mean, you have down here. I don't think we're really going to get to the costing issues here.
No, I wrote a TBD right now. The approach is already determined.
I would recommend that we focus as much as possible on, just.
Okay.
That we focus instead of saying, oh, we want a sample here, we want a sample there, we want to sample the mussels everywhere, and we want to put some caged mussels in, and we want to look at bacteria and everything. You're up to $500,000. So.
I think it can be a lot simpler and doesn't really need to be defined to that. To that degree, we could put financial constraints on the RFP. I mean, that's something that we can do, and we can tier everything on there so that, some proposals may come back and say, well, we can, hit tier one of all these different areas that you're interested in, or some proposal may come back and say, well, you know what, we can only do this one thing, but we can do tier one and tier two.
Oh, that's a good idea.
What I mean? And so... That's just my sense on it, and I do think we need to define as much as we can on it, but I don't think we need to get too specific about what the indicator species you're going to use are in this area and what species you're going to collect. We say use an indicator species such as mussels reference this study. main study of, you know, various industrial outfalls where they use those mussels. You know, use in fauna species. You don't say which ones, in the, fuss over that, but like get in, just let them kind of determine those pieces of it.
Right.
So the frequency of monitoring, one time versus
I think we're going to be restricted to one time.
I think we're looking at a one. My idea is this isn't a monitoring. This is a survey. We're going to get a one-time look at this out of this proposal, and that may determine whether or not we want to set up some sort of monitoring program, which is something we would take to city council.
Well, bioaccumulation is not something that's a short-term phenomenon.
No, but so say if the frequency is, say, every other year, and then city encumber funds to do that part two study, you start it, you come back in a set amount of time and make sure that that's there.
I would recommend we do one study, and then based on the results of that study, we can see whether that's
for DDT.
Necessary.
Yeah, but Harriet does.
So, what about the sub-task force? It
can't
be more than three people.
I appreciate you getting this pulled back in.
It's my busy time of the year. It was winter time, and I had a lot more time.
Okay.
I get hungry.
All right.
I get busy. Yeah.
So, who else would be available? If it's more than three, then we just pull it to this meeting. There's one taker.
Yeah.
You taker. There's two.
David and Charlie, and who else?
I know it's Ansiglio.
Ansiglio doesn't want to. Well, maybe I'll. Okay. I guess the one thing that I wanted to.
You volunteer?
Well, I was hoping in.
No, there's no pressure. If you don't, I'll do it.
There's no pressure.
I'm not me.
Yeah, he's done this before. Yeah. I've lived for years with his office, separated by one or two.
You know how it works.
So who are the sub-task force people?
I guess I wanted to find out how much it was going to cost for a bioaccumulation study. I guess
yes, remember the subcommittee is for us to find out.
Sorry,
all right.
That'll come in the proposal.
Yeah. So
yeah, but I think I would like to.
I can't volunteer twice.
I have Charlie and David at this.
Charlie,
point.
David, one more.
And
I've been volunteered.
Okay, so there we have it.
Okay.
But it won't be at
so. Let's look for the moment.
I gave you guys the wrong website before for the Blue Water Task Force data. It's Surfrider. It's www.surfrider.org/blue-water-task-force.
Whoa.
Yeah. All these dashes in between.
And just a water dash of nutmeg, as you say.
What about the existing shellfish surveys that are going on
there? They don't do the heavy metals.
Can you request them to do it? They take the studies anyway.
Okay.
No? Can you pay them money to do it? No.
The one thing I know they do is domoic acid, since it's shellfish poisoning. But
I don't even, get domoic acid.
That
and
would be something for your workshop. I want to.
There's
Pisco
and there's NOAA, and they all have shellfish studies.
So
go out and do this.
So just to move along, we have a workshop for item number 5 on the agenda. Number 6, we're to discuss how to obtain a rough order of magnitude costing. That's to be determined. You know, we have reference data. We'll come up with that. That's to be determined. The type of item number 7 is type of procurement and approach. We already have that as RFP. So. We agreed to that last week.
It just depends on the
scope of work.
And our public contracting rules. So we'll,
okay.
It probably will have to be an RFP.
Okay. Alrighty. Because we can get ROM costing if we do a request for quote, but that's one approach.
I don't think we can do that based on the cost of this and compliance.
Okay. So then, I just do want to call, when do we meet again? Let's just call for the 2 weeks from now, or
is that going to be enough time for the task force to get together? Because my impression is what you really need to have happen now is for the task force to develop the scope of work that includes the type of study and the area of study.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
And
what
so,
and where?
Otherwise, we're just going to have the same kind of discussion.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, but 2 weeks.
It's not
enough time, probably, is
right.
it?
I personally got to have some time to read and to do some searching and.
Okay, so put that into June.
2 weeks
and
of June 8th.
And I'm gone. So I don't know
what
that.
You're not available with that.
Not June 8th.
Well, that's
by the way,
2 weeks.
Muscles live 8 to 15 years, in case anybody's curious.
Oh my goodness.
But I mean, you people, the three of you, need a chance to meet and develop this before you bring it back to the entire committee. So I think you're practically looking at a month.
Oh, at least. Okay. Yeah.
July time frame?
Oh, well.
Which May could be end of June. Well.
So my next date would be June 22nd. Is that enough time?
What day is it?
That's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
For a regular meeting or the workshop?
No.
The regular meeting. What we're talking about is setting a regular meeting, so but allowing time for the sub-task force to do their work.
June 22nd, Wednesday. Somebody, you would have to chair that meeting because hopefully I'll be in the PTO.
Well,
what's that mean?
Personal time off.
Oh.
We between the three of us, how much can you guys feel like you can do?
It's fancy for
I'm learning a lot.
Sort of
vacation.
Collectively over email.
Get started.
But be careful when you're conducting business over email.
Oh, yes, the public access information.
Don't copy the rest of them.
For the three of us, just make sure we don't include anybody other than the
exactly.
three of us. Right.
Okay. Oh,
because then it turns into a.
Because then it turns into a public meeting via email.
Oh, it turns into a forum.
He didn't get the ethics.
Email
because, no, he didn't get it. But honestly, there'd be somebody in the group who's not in the sub-task force who couldn't resist responding to an email. And there we would have it, and we would be on the front page of the paper again.
Like today.
Yeah.
Were you on the front page of the paper?
Oh,
you guys having secret email meetings?
No, the city council had an illegal meeting, presumably. They were too many of them together in one place.
And she'll show up at the same party or something?
June 22nd it is.
Well, wait a minute. Did they say they could work with that date?
About it. No. Guess what? This is a quorum.
Even that, as long as it has something to do with the airport.
Can't you take a vote? No. This is not a quorum.
No, I said before that meeting started, if one more person comes in here, this is going to be a problem.
So,
just have to be careful.
I mean, I may not be able to make the meeting, but if the three of us have to.
Well, what if
together,
we put it out to June 29th?
Better.
That would be
back
for me.
Well, let's do it on June 29th. Will that work for you, Charlie and Anne?
Yes, that will work.
I'm pretty much here. I'm going to be working on gardens and that sort of thing.
No, you're going to be working on the task force stuff then.
Everyone else okay with June 29th? That will be our next regular meeting. In the meantime, these people will meet, just the three of them.
Yes. Don't worry.
You need to exchange numbers and emails and stuff, or do you have that?
David.young@epa.gov?
No, it's not. It's not real David.
Oh.
See, you've been gone.
And what's your
time?
Email address?
A. C. Siglio.
Peter, can you make that?
Siglio.
Like it sounds.
Yeah, at Yahoo.com.
Or are you still on PTO?
Yeah, I might be.
Where are you headed?
Hopefully Hawaii.
I've never been.
I've never used the EPA one.
Well, there you go. It's time.
I'm embarrassed to say
I call it
Google email at home.
Annual leave.
We have one.
Annual
I think it's.
I just call it vacation.
I call it vacation. Actually, I call it vacation, yes.
Well, there's a big push for us to get below 300 hours of accrued time.
Oh, we can't carry over more than 240.
Yeah, that's me too.
Yeah.
I lost last year.
I think it's just proof too.
Yeah.
Which island? You said Hawaii.
Are you ready to adjourn so the whole world can't hear your vacation
plan?
Yeah. I'd say the meeting's adjourned.
Oh, wait. Charlie has an announcement.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Not really adjourned.
I didn't know if folks were aware of the Yukona Bay Ocean Observing Initiative. It's a group of scientists and business folks and
worldwide six locations.
Well, that's the Ocean Observatory, but this is it's related to that. It's more kind of all the various things with NOAA and other things that are happening right now in the interest of trying to put together some cohesive research plans and also some things that would drive, I think, financial interest to the area. So they're having a public sort of meeting on July 14th.
That's Bastille Day.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever that's worth.
And that's at the Hatfield Marine Center in the auditorium.
And what's it called again?
It's the Yukona Bay Ocean Observatory Initiative. Or Yukona Bay Ocean Observing Initiative. So George Bullard, Gil Sylvia, Rick Brown, Don Mann, Joanne Barton, Bud Shoemake, Jeff Feldner, Terry Thompson. These are all some of the folks that are on their steering committee.
What's their rate called? They're putting in the infrastructure right now. Do real time monitoring.
That's the Ocean Observatory Initiative. Yeah, this, the OOI.
This is different.
This is different. Yeah.
Oh, this is just local.
This is kind of saying all this stuff is happening here, like OOI, and let's wrap our head around
economic development.
Let's wrap our head around what are the local economic development strategies and opportunities from the science and business community.
Is there funding and grant opportunities?
When it comes to when things are happening in one place or another, then the money follows it. For example, when wave energy came to Oregon, the federal government dumped a whole bunch of money into Oregon for marine spatial planning, which is why we have this territorial sea planning process. And the industry brings money too. So. Yes, the short of it is when stuff like that's happening, the big grantors and funders of the world, the Packard Foundations and things like that out there become interested and their ears perk up. Yeah, so I just thought it may be of interest to this group at some point in time. And I would think, if you're on the city council or stuff like that, you'll probably be made aware of it.
So the next meeting, which will be on the 29th, your agenda will consist of a review of the work developed by this sub-task force, right?
Correct.
All righty then.
The scope.
And give me your email number.
Okay. So we are re-adjourned. Is that right?
We are adjourned.
No.